That's memphis-express.com. Professional football is back in the city of Memphis.
Get ready for a meal to remember, because Kroger is here to help you save on an amazing spread for your holiday party. Enjoy low prices on the perfect turkey or ham, delicious produce that's always fresh, plus delightful desserts from the bakery. And save on everything you need to celebrate the season deliciously. That's how you holiday.
Smithfield Shank half hams are 99 cents a pound, limit two. And pint blueberries or 6 ounce raspberries are $2.99 with card. Fresh food, low prices at Kroger.
Attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
You hear the phrase a lot this time of year, Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays. But holidays are not always happy, particularly for guys grappling with a divorce that they didn't choose. Suddenly, these husbands and dads are thrust onto battlefields where the fate of everything they care about will be decided. In the meantime, they must await the outcome in someone else's home this holiday season. These men need more than the help of a good lawyer. They need the hope and encouragement of a good friend. Chances are I've described someone that you count among your friends. Be sure to remember him this season.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives. Contact the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Memphis attorneys. A partner men can count on. 901-362-3666. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. 6000 Poplar Avenue, Suite 225, Memphis, Tennessee, 38119.
Some nights are truly enchanted, especially during holiday wonders at the garden at Memphis Botanic Garden. Bring the family to ooh and awe at the area's most interesting and unique holiday light show. Close to home, easy parking, and unlimited fresh air. Get discount tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. Brought to you by Pro Show Systems.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
Gary Parish. Brad Carson is in studio producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions. And I hope if you're a podcast listener, you've been enjoying the Fall of a Titan podcast. I mentioned it a little bit yesterday. It's a 9-part series. Episode 8 was released today. I can't recommend it enough. I'm going to spend most of this first segment telling you about it because my first guest is the host of it. So let me set this afternoon schedule, and then we'll get right to it. At 425, more like 420, Tim Rowan's going to join me from Sports Illustrated. He decided, at the urging of his editors, to re-examine, not necessarily investigate, but re-examine the murder of former Tennessee Titans quarterback Steve McNair. The result is this 9-episode podcast that is releasing new episodes every Wednesday. Like I said, the 8th episode released today. The last episode will be released next Wednesday. Tim Rowan's going to join me to talk about what he's learned about the Steve McNair case. He's going to be here about 4:20. Finish that segment. I'll do 4 notable stories, 4:44, at which point we're going to discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the Grizzlies back in FedEx Forum tonight. Blazers are in town. I get you ready for that around 4:44. College football playoff really might be expanding, and sooner rather than later. Interesting story from Nicole Auerbach at The Athletic earlier today. I'll tell you about that a little later on this hour. The Big East is seriously considering expanding by one school. I'll tell you which school I think it ought to be just before 5 o'clock. And Daryl Henderson's Memphis football career is over. Announced today he's entering the NFL draft. Announced today he's going to not play in the Birmingham Bowl. I'll tell you about that during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins. Just like always, then we'll eventually do Dinner to Go, and we'll get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to. But I wanted to start by getting you properly prepared for my first guest, who is Tim Rowan. Like I said earlier, he's a staff writer at Sports Illustrated, and he's the man who has reported and created the Fall of a Titan podcast that focuses on the murder of former Titans quarterback Steve McNair. It's 9 episodes long. The 8th episode was released earlier today, and I cannot recommend it enough. I started listening to it on my trip to Maui. because I was going to the Maui Invitational, and that was, I guess I flew there the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And anytime you're going to be spending that much time on a plane, like 4 hours to L.A., 6 hours from L.A. to Honolulu, I think leave door, get to hotel, it's about a 19, 20-hour experience for me. So you've got a lot of time in airports, a lot of time on planes, and a lot of time even in, like, Ubers, because when you land at the airport in Maui, it's still about a 45-minute drive to the resort. And so I started just trying to find anything that might interest me and keep me from not being bored with all this travel time. So I download a bunch of episodes of a Netflix series that I want to watch. I download a movie that I'd been wanting to see. And then I downloaded some podcasts that I wanted to listen to. And one of them was Fall of a Titan, the Steve McNair a podcast hosted by Tim Rowan. Now, for those unfamiliar, some background on Steve McNair. From Mount Olive, Mississippi. Great football player. Was also a great baseball player. I don't think people realize this. He was actually selected by the Seattle Mariners in the 1991 Major League Baseball draft. But rather than sign, he decided to go to college to play football. Florida offered him a scholarship, but they wanted him to play running back. They didn't think he was a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to play quarterback, so he went to Alcorn State. Becomes an All-American. Actually finishes third in the Heisman voting in 1994. And then the Houston Oilers took him with the third overall pick of the 1995 NFL Draft. Then when the Oilers moved to Nashville and become the Tennessee Titans, he becomes the Tennessee Titans quarterback. Played the Super Bowl. Made three Pro Bowls. Was the MVP of the NFL in 2003. And he threw for 31,304 yards in his career before retiring from the NFL in 2007. 2 years later, he's dead. The age of 36, found shot to death in a condo in downtown Nashville on July 4th, 2009. You might remember it.
Yep.
4 days after that, just 4 days after that, the Nashville Police Department rules it a murder-suicide. As the story goes, Steve McNair had been married to Michelle McNair since 1997, but he was in a several-months-long relationship with a 20-year-old named Sahel Kazemi. She went by Jenny. Her friends called her Jenny. Steve McNair had met her at David Buster's at the Opryland Mall, which, it was weird. I was listening to this podcast, and then just there a couple weeks ago.
You remember that?
So I was like the whole time wanting to ask people, like, so did you know Jenny Kazemi?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I just kept it myself. So he meets her there.
Yep.
They start this relationship. They travel together. And police concluded that in the early hours of July 4th, Jenny Kazemi shot Steve McNair four times, twice in the head, twice in the chest. And then she shot herself, murder-suicide. And that's what the police concluded. Case closed. And nationally, it's just sort of been left there. That's all most people know, that Steve McNair was that NFL quarterback who was having an affair with a young woman, and then his mistress shot him before shooting herself. And perhaps that is exactly what happened. But this Fall of a Titan podcast has done a terrific job explaining that this story might not be so simple. For starters, it is true that McNair was married, but he and his wife weren't conducting themselves as a couple anymore. They weren't estranged necessarily, but essentially they were. So much so that it had gotten to a point where McNair was very publicly with Jenny Kazemi. It wasn't hidden from his friends or from the public or...
He wasn't sneaking around with this woman, apparently.
There was no sneaking at all.
I gotcha.
My understanding, if I remember correctly, is that even Michelle McNair was aware of Jenny Kazemi.
Okay.
I don't think most people realize that.
Mm-mm.
And again, perhaps it's not important to the details of the murder, but it is interesting still.
Yeah, I remember that he had an affair, but I didn't remember that. I didn't realize that.
So the National Police Department, they end up tracing the gun that they believe is the murder weapon. The gun that they found under Jenny Kazemi's body. They trace it to a man named Adrian Gilliam. And so they go to talk to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to know how this gun that it can be traced back to him. How did it end up in Steve McNair's condo? How did it end up as a weapon in a murder-suicide? And so he tells Nashville Police Department that he met Jenny Kazemi like one time. He was going to sell her a car. And then he ends up selling her a gun.
Oh.
Because that's usually the way those things go, right? And he basically says that's that. Mm. I met this girl. I didn't even really know her name.
Sold her a gun.
I recognize her. The picture you're showing me that looks like her. But I just, you know, I was going to sell her a gun. She reached out to me about, I was going to sell her a car. She reached out to me about a car. Then she asked me about a gun. I had a gun. I sold her a gun. That's that.
All right.
Turns out, complete lie. He'd been texting and talking with Jenny Kazemi for weeks. He was trying to date her.
Oh.
Or at least sleep with her. They exchanged, phone records show, more than 200 phone calls in the weeks leading up to Steve McNair's murder. They exchanged 49 texting calls the day before Steve McNair's murder. Now think about that. How many people have you talked to 200 times this year?
One. My wife.
It really might be my wife. That's
one. That's it.
That is an excessive amount of time to spend talking to somebody.
Yep.
But that is how much time Jenny Kazemi and Adrian Gilliam spent talking and texting with each other in the weeks leading up to Steve McNair's murder.
Yeah.
They talked 200 times in a span of like 3 weeks. So he lies to Nashville Police Department about the nature of their relationship. And guess what else?
All right.
He's not just a guy who was trying to pursue Jenny Kazemi. He's a convicted murderer.
Oh.
He had done time for a murder case previously.
This is crazy.
So then police ask him, okay, where were you the night of Steve McNair's murder? He says he was at a friend's house.
All right.
Police go to the friend.
Yeah.
Friend says, hey, listen, I love Adrian, but I ain't lying on a murder case.
Yeah.
He was not here.
Yeah.
Friend says it's just not true. So now we've got Adrian Gilliam, lies about his relationship with Jenny Kazemi, lies about an alibi. He's a convicted murderer, and there's also literally no evidence that he ever actually sold the gun to Jenny Kazemi. He says it happened in the parking lot at Dave & Buster's. Surveillance video shows no such thing ever happening. And yet the Nashville Police Department rules him out. This convicted murderer whose story makes no sense and does not check out, they rule him out in a matter of days. It's insane.
It's remarkable.
Meantime, when McNair's body was found, and these are all the little things that are just weird. When his body's found, he had like $7 in his pocket. Now, that would probably be exactly how my body would be found. I do not carry cash because I lose it or my children steal it. But every friend of Steve McNair says that he would never just had $7 in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
He always carried large amounts of money, like $100 bills
right.
on top of $100 bills on top of $100 bills. He had been out that night.
Mm-hmm.
They just say it's just simply like that is not the way Steve McNair walked around
right.
with just $7 in his pocket. That ain't him. The implication being that he was robbed.
Yep.
Obviously, you're not robbed in a murder-suicide. Mm. Also, his friends say that there was a safe in the condo.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there.
Gone.
After his body was discovered. Obviously, nobody takes a safe in a murder-suicide, but his friends insist that there was a safe there. It's no longer there. Police say they have no evidence that the safe was ever there, but the friends who actually were in this condo all the time say there was a safe there. It's not there anymore. Also, surveillance videos show multiple cars leaving McNair's condo in the middle of the night. These cars have never been accounted for. Nobody knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But they're leaving his condo. Why? If it's a murder-suicide, nobody leaves.
Right.
Also, when his friend finds the body, the bodies, they don't call police for 44 minutes. Why? So when you combine all this with the fact that the estranged wife got all of the money the moment that McNair was dead, which means she benefited more from his death than anybody else. And then you combine it with the fact that he just had a big falling out with a friend who had stolen like $30,000 from him. There's just a lot of stuff here. And I'm not going to insist that it wasn't a murder-suicide. I don't know. But there's enough weird stuff here
to
make it crazy
that the Nashville Police Department closed the case so quickly, like in a matter of 4 days. And for whatever it's worth, most friends of Jenny and Steve don't actually think Jenny killed Steve and herself. Some do.
Yeah.
But not most. Not everybody buys it, especially considering how it happened. Two shots to the head, right temple, left temple, two shots to the chest, like a professional hit or something. And by all accounts, Jenny had literally never shot a gun. Now she's buying a gun and shooting her boyfriend like an assassin?
10 point.
Again, maybe, maybe. But most people don't seem to buy it like the Nashville Police Department buys it. Bottom line, it's possible that this was a murder-suicide. Perhaps it happened exactly as the Nashville Police Department says. But it is incredible that they closed the case in 4 days with all of these other questions out there. That's what I think, at least. I believe that's what Tim Rowan also thinks. He's the host of Fall of a Titan, the podcast focusing on Steve McNair's murder. He's going to join me right after this break. You're listening to The Gary Parish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Tis the season, and you know what that means. The whole family celebrating under one roof, so your Wi-Fi needs to keep up. That's why Xfinity XFi delivers the best Wi-Fi experience with the most reliable internet. Now the whole gang can stream, game, and share at the same time. And watch their holiday favorites at home or on the go with the Xfinity Stream app. Plus, see how you can save when you switch your wireless carrier to Xfinity Mobile. It's included with your internet. Switch and save hundreds. Now that's simple, easy, awesome.
Power your holidays with America's best internet provider. Get Xfinity Internet with up to 150 megabits per second download speed, plus TV for $40 each a month for 2 years when you bundle both with a two-year agreement. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Wireless savings compares average regular monthly charge of top providers. Requires EcoBill paperless billing and autopay. Offer ends 12/30/18. Restrictions apply. New X1 Starter Double Play customers only. Equipment taxes and fees, including BTV and RSN fees, extra and subject to change. After agreement, regular rates apply.
This is Gary Parish from The Gary Parish Show, and at this point, I've been telling you about James Davis for years. You already know it's one of the best clothing stores in the entire country, and now you need to know it's the place to go for all your holiday shopping. Let me tell you the perfect gift. It's a custom shirt gift card from James Davis. Starts at $98. You buy it, then give it. Then the recipient can come in at his convenience and get a custom-made shirt. It's simple for you and awesome for him. Also, right now, Croc belts that are normally $2.95 are just $1.95. 100% cashmere quarter-zip sweaters, regularly $2.95, just $1.95. Got cotton cashmere blend sweaters for only $98. Got a fabulous selection of Peter Millar, Barber, and cool men's vests and jackets available in the store. And Tumi Luggage's Alpha Series is currently 20% off. So whether you're shopping for yourself or somebody else, you need to get to James Davis to see the amazing store with amazing deals. How great is it? Penny Hardaway is now the best-dressed coach in all of college basketball. That's because of Rob Joyner and my friends at James Davis. Holiday hours begin November 25th. That's when they'll be open on Sundays for your convenience. James Davis, Laurelwood Shopping Center on the web, jamesdavisstore.com.
Here it is, winter, and nobody is looking to buy a house. Wrong. This is Sheldon Rosengarten, also known as Shell Dunn, with Mark Spensdorf Realtors. You cannot believe the level of activity that goes on at this time of year. Well, a lot of it is due to low inventory and low rates. It's also due to people thinking that they ought to wait until spring to put their homes on the market. Wrong again. In the spring, March and April, when the azaleas bloom, so do the real estate signs. I have two offers working on Thanksgiving Day, and in the past, I've sold homes on New Year's Day and Christmas Eve. And while local buyers may be sitting and waiting, our out-of-town relocation buyers are hot to trot. So if you're even remotely thinking of selling in the future or the present, call or email me to find out how my highly successful strategic marketing program can mean the difference in whether you sit or sell. Remember, when you want the job done, call Shell Dunn, 682-1868 or MemphisRelocate.com. Do it now. Call Shell Dunn at 682-1868 or MemphisRelocate.com.
The holiday season has arrived, so if you're like me, Gary Parish, you probably have parties to attend and you might not want to show up empty-handed. So you might want to grab a bottle of New Amsterdam Vodka to make sure you're not empty-handed. New Amsterdam Vodka, it's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. It's 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness, filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. And as you surely know by now, it's so smooth, you can drink it straight. And yes, it really is what I buy when I'm inside the liquor store. And that's because it's an awesome vodka that's reasonably priced, which is among the reasons it is. New Amsterdam, the fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. If you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam offers a variety. The newest is grapefruit, but they also have apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. So if you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam, they got you covered. Please ask for it by name when you're in a bar, restaurant, or in a wine and spirit store. That's New Amsterdam Vodka. Pour your soul out on the web. NewAmsterdamSpirits.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
421 Gary Parish Show. We're on 92.9 FM, ESPN. The Grizzlies are back in FedEx Forum tonight playing the Blazers. I'm going to get you ready for that in the next segment. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, my next guest works for Sports Illustrated, and he's the host of the Fall of a Titan podcast, which is re-examining the murder of former Tennessee Titans quarterback Steve McNair. Episode 8 was released today. I cannot recommend it enough. You can listen via SI.com, Apple Podcast, or basically anywhere you get podcasts. My guest is Tim Rowan. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Tim, it's Gary. I can't thank you enough for being here. Thanks so much for carving out a few minutes for me.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, Gary.
So, first things first, completely enamored with the podcast. As I told the story in the opening segment, I was getting ready to go to Maui for the Maui Invitational. A lot of time in airplanes. I decided to, like, just download some things that might interest me. Among them was your podcast, and I've been hooked ever since, waiting for Wednesday to come every single week. When you decide to tackle this project, and I don't mean to use the word tackle in a football way, but when you decide to go down this path, at what point do you realize, you know what, this might not be as clear-cut of a murder-suicide as it had been previously reported?
Yeah, so, you know, I guess for people who haven't been listening, you know, it started, you know, I met this former Nashville cop named Vincent Hill, and, you know, he's been obsessed with the Steve McNair case since it happened, you know, 9-plus years ago. He's written 2 books. He's, you know, interviewed people. He's talked to sources. He's basically reinvestigating the case on his own. And he's also been working, you know, at various points on behalf of Steve McNair's mother, Lucille. He's also been in contact with Jenny Kazemi, Steve's mistress, who was alleged to have killed him. So, you know, talking to Vincent, you know, that kind of sparked my interest in intrigue in the case, just, you know, the fact that, you know, he had these questions. But I think to answer your question, the thing that really – you know, piqued my interest and got me going is when I started talking to Steve's friends and family and friends and family of Jenny Kazemi, and just the questions they had, and, you know, the fact that they had questions and they felt like the case was unsettled, you know, 8-9 years later, you know, that's where, you know, it seemed like they were legitimate questions.
I don't know exactly how you feel this went down. I might ask you before we get out of here, but I think you and I are at least in agreement that the idea that this was wrapped up, case closed, in a matter of 4 days is kind of incredible, given all of the stuff that you've reported in this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of at the crux of this. You know, we kind of, you know, through the podcast, we walk you through all the different characters and the different people involved. There was Steve McNair's former bodyguard who is alleged to have stolen $13,000 from Steve shortly before he died. You know, there was Jenny Kazemi's ex-boyfriend who may have been jealous of her seeing Steve McNair, who I was told was his favorite football player. There was a guy who was a used or I guess a car salesman in Nashville, an ex-con who allegedly sold Jenny the murder weapon, and whose alibi, you know, appears to be shaky. So, you know, I could just keep going. You know, there's so many questions and different rabbit holes you could go down. And it took me 15 months to wrap my head around all this stuff. So, you know, I was, you know, I think a lot of people were surprised and have questions about how the Nashville police could have wrapped it up in just 4 days.
I'm talking to Tim Rowan from Sports Illustrated. He is the host of Fall of a Titan, the podcast, 9-part series re-examining the murder of former Tennessee Titans quarterback Steve McNair. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts and also at SI.com. You mentioned the ex-con slash car salesman. His name's Adrian Gilliam. And to me, he's the one that is, I don't know if he was involved in this, but I don't know how you can rule him out in a matter of 4 days when, A, the murder weapon belongs to him.
B, he says that he sold it to Jenny Kazemi, but there is literally no evidence that that happened. Surveillance where he says it happened, which is at Dave and Buster's, doesn't pick it up at all. C, he says initially that he barely knew Jenny. We now know that that's untrue. They were talking, I think, in excess of 200 times via phone. D, his alibi, as you point out, like he says I was at this friend's house. The friend says no, he wasn't. And he's a convicted murderer. So like the idea that you could just like rule him out so quickly is bananas to me.
Yeah, Gary, I think you know. Well, it sounds like you've been listening. You weren't kidding about that. But yeah. I mean, I think you know Vincent Hill would agree wholeheartedly with you. The police. I'll point out, too, the police wrapped up the case and they said, hey, this is a murder-suicide. Jenny Kazemi killed Steve McNair. They wrapped up this case after just talking to Gilliam for 7 minutes, you know, and then they had to circle back and interview him again. They had a longer interview and they had to get to the bottom of things because, like you said, he misled them at the start. And, you know, there's so much there. You know, I'm not going to go as far as to say, what they should have done or whatever, but it's just hard to, it's hard to imagine. Like you said, as you laid out there so well, there's so many questions about that guy. And, as we're going to get into the final episode, I think Vincent Hill, certainly thinks Adrian Gilliam, whether he knows more or whatever, Vincent Hill thinks Adrian Gilliam's at the center of this case.
I mentioned in the opening that there's also surveillance from, I believe, a radio station near the downtown condo that picks up two cars leaving Steve McNair's condo in the middle of the night that have never been accounted for. As I pointed out, in a murder-suicide, as described, nobody leaves. There are no cars leaving a murder-suicide. That is also just another interesting twist here, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so there was a car, two cars leaving. I mean, it was probably, the police have said that Steve was murdered sometime around 1:30. If I remember, I think the cars were leaving around 3-something in the morning. Playing devil's advocate here. I mean, this is the interesting thing about this case, right? You could look at it and say, that's fishy. Like, there's two cars leaving the area of the complex. And then you could also say, I mean, I don't know, someone could have been driving through the alleyway. There's other people who live back there, but just the fact that, whatever. So not so far away, like one or two doors down, Steve McNair just been murdered. It's interesting, but I don't know for sure how deeply they looked into that, whether that was, they just kind of dismissed it. And the police report is saying that, there was no suspicious activity in the area of the condo around that time. And I'm kind of, we're kind of left, Gary, just asking these sort of questions. And I think, we make this point in the podcast that, because they ruled this a murder suicide, Jenny wasn't alive. Like, they didn't have to convict her of murder. There's no one checking, the police's work here, right? There's no trial. There's no cross examination. There's no, defense team. There's no, so it's just kind of the police said, this is what happened. They told us that there's no suspicious activity in the area of the condo. And, Steve McNair's friends and family are just left, the police tell them, hey, you have to accept that.
I'm talking to Tim Rowan from Sports Illustrated. He's the host of the Fall of the Titan podcast, re-examining the murder of former Tennessee Titans quarterback Steve McNair. You can find it, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, basically anywhere you find podcasts. Another interesting aspect of this is that one of Steve's friends is the person who discovers the body. The bodies. And when he discovers the bodies, he doesn't call 911. He calls another friend. And it's not until 44 minutes after that that the police are actually called. I know the Nashville Police Department, the investigators, and this was on today's episode, basically tell you like that's really just not that concerning to them. But it doesn't seem normal, does it?
No, yeah. I mean, that was, that's a big, especially when you look at, you look at who he's calling. And as I mentioned earlier, so Wayne Neely finds the bodies and he calls Robert Gaddy, this guy who apparently was feuding with Steve. Steve's friends told me that he and Steve had a huge falling out and, they weren't friends anymore. And now here's Gaddy over at Steve's condo. And, you know, I mean, we just kind of lay out, you know, we're careful to just lay out what we know. But, you know, some people have wondered, you know, were there items missing from the condo? You know, the police asked Neely and Gaddy as much. They said, did you guys take anything from the condo? And they both said no. But, yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, again, going back to your old point about, you know, the fact this case was closed in 4 days, you know, when the police interviewed Neely and Gaddy, you know, I've watched those interviews. I have those tapes. And, you know, they don't treat them so much as suspects as more of informants. Like, you know, what you know, they ask Gaddy at one point, what do you think happened? They ask him, what does he think of Neely, the other guy he was with? So, you know, you could tell, you know, just watching the interviews that it wasn't a, you know, wasn't your typical interrogation, like, you know, what do you know? And you know, we haven't really talked about this a whole bunch in the podcast, but Vincent Hill, the ex-National cop, I mean, he's been looking at this for 9 years. He's listened to these interviews. And him and I have been sitting, you know, would sit and chat. And, a lot of times he would critique, oh, they should have asked this, or, you know, just the interrogation methods they were using. You know, in Vincent's mind, he's of the opinion that, you know, they saw Jenny and Steve dead, and, you know, the murder-suicide was going to be, you know, essentially the conclusion they came to. And, you know, that's, you know, and then wrapped it up in 4 days.
Vincent Hill, another point he makes is that, you know, there are four gunshots to Steve McNair. Right temple, left temple, two in the chest. I don't know anything about how people kill other people, but he seems to believe that that is just not the way a young woman who has never handled a gun is going to kill another person. That is more like an execution, the way a gang might do it. You know, two in the head, and then I think they call them taps to the chest. Two in the chest.
They call it a double tap.
Double tap, right. And so, like, that's just another interesting point where at least Vincent Hill is skeptical that if Jenny Kazami would have killed Steve McNair, it would not have been with such precision, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about in the podcast how that's a prevailing point. I mean, I talked to a lot of friends and family, people who knew both these people involved, Jenny and Steve. And that, I would say that was probably the biggest thing I heard. The thing I heard the most often was, you know, four shots, two in the chest, one in each temple. You know, that's just hard to believe, you know. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, I think it has more to do about her lack of maybe, you know, what I've been told, her lack of gun skills than, you know, her being a, you know, people say, how could this petite female have fired a gun like that? But, you know, she was a novice. And, you know, to say that she fired, you know, four shots, you know, people have suggested, you know, you do it once. If she did, you know, kill Steve McNair, you shoot him once. And why the extra three times, and why, you know, like you suggested, why does it look so professional?
Talking to Tim Rowan from Sports Illustrated. He's the host of the Fall of a Titan podcast that is reexamining the murder of former Tennessee Titans quarterback Steve McNair. It's a 9-part series. Episode 8 released today. The final episode will be released next Wednesday. Simple question, but it might be a complicated answer. Do you believe Jenny Kazami killed Steve McNair?
So, you know, I've gone back and forth in that, Gary. I think, you know, I'll discuss that more in the finale next week.
Sure.
But I think, you know, what I can say is, you know, kind of to answer what you've kind of suggested throughout this us talking is, you know, I think there should be, I think the case should be reexamined. I think there should be some independent party to come in and, you know, take a look at this and really, you know, someone with, you know, more power than I have to go back and reexamine it and, you know, really look at all these different things we've raised throughout the podcast. Now, you know, can I say definitively? Maybe I'll save that for the finale. But, you know, I think at the very least, you know, I think we've shown throughout the podcast that, you know, the case should at least be relooked at by the authorities.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's Tim Rowan from Sports Illustrated. If you haven't checked out the A Fall of a Titan podcast, I can't recommend it enough. I was very busy today, but I found 42 minutes or whatever I needed to make sure to listen to episode 8. I can't wait for the final episode. Terrific work, man. You've done a really amazing job with this, and Congratulations, because you deserve it.
Gary, you're the best. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Tim Rowan from Sports Illustrated here on 92.9 FM ESPN. I mean that sincerely. I wouldn't tell you to go listen to something that isn't fascinating. This is fascinating. And like I said in the opening segment, it's possible that it really was a murder-suicide. But I think it's impossible to be certain of that.
Yep.
After investigating for only 4 days. Again, the murder weapon, and to me this is the most startling fact of the case, that had not gone previous. I don't know if it had gone previous. I was unaware of it.
Right.
The murder weapon's traced back to a man named Adrian Gilliam.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm a car salesman. This young woman, I don't even know her name, wants to buy a car. One thing leads to another. She asks me about a gun. I tell her I got a gun. She buys a gun. Where did this happen? David Buster's. That's where she worked.
I guess they go, all gun deals go down.
They go pull surveillance.
Yeah.
There's no evidence.
No
that
evidence.
Perhaps the cameras missed it, but it's not. It didn't get caught. He also says that, because they say, okay, well, what'd she do with the gun? He's like, she put it in her little, apron that she wore while working at Dave and Buster's. The people who work at Dave and Buster's say, if you put a gun in that apron, it's noticeable. She just didn't do that. Mm-hmm. Like that, she didn't come back in with a gun. Nobody saw that.
Right.
You would see it. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw it. Turns out his story about barely knowing Jenny is just not true. They've been talking for weeks, more than 200 times.
Yeah.
So then police ask, well, where were you the night Steve McNair was murdered? He says, I was at this guy's house, his buddy. Police go to the buddy. Buddy says, listen, that's my buddy.
Yeah.
But I'm not lying for anybody in a murder case. He was not here that night. So he lies about his relationship with Jenny Kazemi. He lies about where he was the night of the murder. He's also a convicted murderer.
Yeah.
There's no evidence that the gun sale actually went down.
He's the guy that you got to look at, I think. I mean, I haven't listened, but...
And they take all this, and they just like, it's a murder-suicide. It's a murder-suicide. 4 days, we got this thing wrapped up.
Wild.
That's the only thing I'll yell forever, is that you can't have that guy...
That guy. Wonder what
involved,
he's doing now.
You can't have that guy involved in this and wrap up an investigation, close a case in a matter of 4 days with all of these questions... still circulating.
What's that guy's name? Adrian
Gilliam.
Gilliam?
He ultimately did do time.
Oh, more time, I guess.
Well, because once he acknowledges that he sold a gun to Jenny Kazemi, he is now a felon in possession of a gun because he was a convicted murderer.
Right.
He had to go back to jail for that, which leads to another question.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to lie to police, why would you lie and your lie include... something that is a federal, that is going to be a felony.
You're
going to
get popped on.
Like his lie.
Yeah.
Everybody, it's undeniable that he lied.
Mm-hmm.
When the cops come to him, he lied.
Yep.
He says he barely knew Jenny Kazemi. That's just not true. He says he was at this guy's house. The guy says not true.
Right.
So he lied. But within his lie, he admits to a felony.
Right.
Because once he tells the cops, I had this gun, I sold it to her, he is admitting to being a felon in possession of gun. Why would your lie include a felony unless you're just, like, lying about real big stuff? Like, why would your lie include a felony unless the goal of the lie was to make sure you weren't charged with murder?
Or it's like you're lying around what the big thing...
Well, that's what I mean.
You're lying around
it. Like, at this point, you're just trying not to catch a murder charge.
I don't want the murder. I'll take the other bullet.
So I'll take the possession of a firearm by a felon charge.
Exactly.
But, like, think of, like, if you really got nothing to do with nothing, why are you lying... And incriminating yourself to where I think he had to go do like another 3 years in prison or something. It's just, again, I'll leave it there. I don't know.
Two and a half years in prison for a felon in possession of a firearm.
I don't know how you have that guy in this story and wrap up a case, close it, murder, suicide, within 4 days. If you haven't listened to the podcast yet, it's terrific. You can find it at ApplePodcastsi.com. Grizzlies back in FedEx Forum tonight. Blazers are in town. We'll talk about that next.
Whatever gets you revved up, Citgo is here to help with top-tier tri-clean gasoline. Continuous use helps maximize mileage so that you can get more life out of every tank. So go rev up with tri-clean at your locally owned Citgo station today. Citgo. Fueling good.
Anyone can deliver a box, but Kroger makes it easy with store pickup and now shipping right to your door. So check out while you're chilling with the app or at Kroger.com.
Hey, Tennessee. GEICO presents Need to Know Information because you have to draw the line between what you need to know and what you don't.
After a scary movie, I have to watch cartoons so I don't have nightmares.
See, didn't need to know that. But when it comes to insurance, the more you know, the better. Like knowing GEICO is the second largest auto insurer in the country. Plus, they've been around for over 75 years and have a 97% customer satisfaction rating.
I have to use a calculator on my first grader's math homework.
Again, not really needed. But knowing GEICO offers more than just car insurance is important, like motorcycle, RV, and boat insurance. And the GEICO Insurance Agency can help you insure your home, apartment, and condo.
I practice taking my glasses off in the mirror because I think it makes me look cool.
And not needed. But you should know GEICO has local agents in your area that could help you find even more ways to save. And GEICO offers emergency roadside service. Switching insurance is an important decision. You can never know too much about it. So, Tennessee, contact GEICO online, over the phone, or at your local office for all the information you really need.
Hey, this is John Martin. You guys know sports is what I do. So if sports is what you do, too, I got the perfect spot for you to go to. And that's the Blue Monkey. It's a great place to catch whatever game happens to be on TV. And it's also a great spot for comfort food, like the hot wing rolls. It's a delicacy. They will not disappoint. Also, it's a fantastic burger spot. In addition to burgers, you got to try the Beef Eater. It's a thinly sliced, slow-roasted prime beef with melted Swiss on a Parmesan-crusted sourdough bun with tiger sauce. And the prime Philly is from the same slow-roast prime rib Philly style with peppers, onions, and Swiss on a hoagie served with au jus. If you want something a little lighter, the Grilled Chicken Club is amazing. It's fully dressed with bacon, cheddar, and jack cheeses, lettuce, tomato, and honey mustard served on a sesame seed bun or croissant. Tons of options. They got two locations, 513 South Front Street downtown, 2012 Madison Avenue in Midtown. Visit BlueMonkeyMemphis.com.
Live team trivia and karaoke every Wednesday and Thursday. Bring a team and win some green. Live music at the Blue Monkey Midtown Friday night, the Turnstiles. On Saturday, Mike Hosty.
Hey, it's Eric Hasseltine from the Memphis Grizzlies here to tell you about the best place to get a pre-owned vehicle in the entire Mid-South, and that is DeSoto Auto Sales. You can visit them on the web at DeSotoAutoSales.com or simply head on over to 5704 Goodman Road in Olive Branch. Why DeSoto Auto Sales, you say? Well, their prices are fantastic. They've got over 250 cars on the lot, and they range in price from $8,000 to $30,000. Most of these cars are still under their factory warranty, so you're getting a great vehicle. They've been inspected five times before they hit the lot. And it's their selection. The lot is always changing. They're trying to get them out of there at the best price possible for their customers so they can clear the lot for more vehicles to come. Trucks, vans, sedans, SUVs, and they can finance you on the spot. They've got financing managers to explain all of your options. It's all there at DeSoto Auto Sales. You can see the entire selection at DeSotoAutoSales.com. Get a great car at a great price. What are you waiting for? Go to DeSotoAutoSales.com or hop on down to 5704 Goodman Road in Olive Branch and visit DeSoto Auto Sales today.
Edwin Watts Golf presents a special holiday offer from TaylorMade. Five layers, zero compromises. TP5 and TP5X combine a tri-fast core and dual spin cover for a five-layer golf ball construction. Now only $34.99. And introducing Gapper, a revolution in long game performance. Available in three shapes, promoting three trajectories, low, mid, and high. This holiday season, shop Edwin Watts Golf, home of the 90-day satisfaction guarantee.
The best place in Tunica for sports betting is now open. The Book It Horseshoe. Analyze your favorite team's performance to make a winning bet. Not sure how to bet? Our knowledgeable, friendly, and helpful staff is ready to assist you. Come in today and see why the Book It Horseshoe is your favorite place to bet and watch all the action. Must be 21 or older to gamble. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
It's time to join the millions of people using Zoom video conferencing. Turn any size conference room, huddle room, or executive office into a Zoom room with flawless HD video, crystal clear audio, and instant wireless sharing. It'll even work with your existing hardware. Start your meetings with a single touch or use Zoom's new voice command feature. Hey Zoom, start meeting. Huddle happy. Visit Zoom.us to set up your free Zoom room trial today. That's Zoom.us. Zoom video conferencing.
Have you heard? Orion Federal Credit Union is redefining banking with their 4% checking account. Visit OrionFCU.com for details. Conditions apply. 0.05% APY on portion of balance above $30,000.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show. Live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick Ross. She seen it made me always feel like a boss. She said I'm in the wrong hole.
New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. It's 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it?
So smooth you can drink it straight.
It's so smooth you can drink it straight. Yes, it really is what I get when I'm in the liquor store. The reason's simple. It's a quality vodka that's reasonably priced. I could pay more for vodka, but...
Fine.
Spend more money on vodka. My wife says I already spent enough.
You buy bulk.
Buy it in bulk.
Yeah.
Fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. And thanks to you guys, we've turned Memphis into the best New Amsterdam market per capita in the entire country. So keep doing what you're doing. Do it more often. They got flavored vodkas as well. Grapefruit's the newest flavor, but they also have apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, raspberry. Try one. Try them all. Mix them together. Get crazy. No matter to me. Just next time you're in a liquor store or a bar or a restaurant, you make sure to ask for it by name. New Amsterdam Vodka. Pour your soul out on the web. NewAmsterdamSpirits.com. Jeff Cargan's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, and I swear I'm going to try to get to him like a little after 5 o'clock for maybe the first time in several weeks. But right now, I got 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. 4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
The Grizzlies are back inside FedEx Forum tonight. Tip-off a little after 7 o'clock. Eric Hasseltine on the call right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. The opponent is the Portland Trail Blazers, who are coming off last night's loss to the Houston Rockets. They were actually up in Houston by double digits, and then it just all sort of fell apart on them. So this is one of those situations where circumstances favor the Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same thing 2 nights ago when the Grizzlies were in Denver.
Yep.
And I know at tip-off the Grizz weren't a favorite, but Denver was down 3 starters. It was a game that you're probably going to be about a 6.5, 7-point underdog at tip because Denver was down 3 starters. You're only a 2, 2.5-point underdog. So it was a more winnable game than it otherwise would have been. Grizzlies still lost it. Mike and Mark didn't shoot well from the field.
They didn't shoot.
Mark specifically did not shoot often.
Yeah.
Only took 6 field goal attempts in the game.
Yeah.
But either way, that was one on the schedule that the circumstances made it more winnable than it otherwise would have been. Same thing here, because the Blazers are on the second night of a back-to-back, whereas the Grizzlies did not play yesterday. And secondly, according to sources, the Blazers had lunch today at Gus's World Famous Fried Chicken.
Ooh.
And getting World Famous Fried Chicken the same afternoon that you have to play a professional basketball game, I don't know how smart that is.
I don't think that's a good strategy.
To get World Famous Fried Chicken on the day you got to play a professional basketball game?
I don't think it's a good idea. I love Gus's too.
Love Gus's
but
too.
But you got to get out there and perform your best. You need to be at peak performance tonight against the Grizzlies.
I love Gus's.
Love Gus's.
I'll swear by Gus's till I die.
We got that new location down here, like on Mendenhall. I go there quite a bit. It's good.
Brad, that has been there for years.
No, it's only been there like 4 years.
Well, can we agree that anything that's been around 4 years is no longer considered new?
It's the newer one.
Like if you have a 4-year-old son, you don't say, "Hey, did you see my new child?"
The newer one. It's the newer location.
It has been there forever.
Okay, the old ass Gus is down here on Mendenhall.
We do have one close by. If that's the point,
I like
trying
having
to make.
One close by so, nowadays.
So I love Gus's.
That's nice.
I've been to the Gus's out in Mason before.
Oh, the original.
Burns
down every 6 years, but it's good.
I went to the original. First time I ever went to the original. It was me.
Is McCluskey there?
No. Can't remember. If it
Kelly
was
with you.
Well, I went to the one in Mason twice.
Okay.
One time it was me.
Yeah.
Corey Brannon and Jason D. Williams.
Oh, wow. Musicians.
And we got there, and they were out of chicken. Swear to God.
How? What?
They had a sign on the door. They were like, we're out of chicken.
You shouldn't run out of chicken if you're a chicken joint.
That's what I thought.
That's a problem.
Like, we just drove all this way to Mason, Tennessee. They're out of chicken.
You got a problem there.
And yet people, if I remember correctly, it was like a gravel parking lot.
Yeah, I've been there.
And people were just like tailgating in the parking lot.
Oh,
like,
sure.
People just like drinking beer and waiting for Gus's to get more chicken. But then when Gus's got more chicken, we were going to be at the back of the line. So it was going to take a while. Yeah. And then Jason D was like, how much money you got in your pocket? And he was asking all of us, how much money you got in your pocket? And he grabbed our money. And he must have took, like, I don't know, around $100 in there.
Whoa.
And he came out with, like 10 pieces of chicken in a bag, which means we paid, like, $10 per piece of chicken.
Seems expensive.
Except seemed totally reasonable in the moment and felt worth it in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said.
The second time I think we went there, that was, I don't know if we'd call it a date, but it was perhaps the first date that I ever had with the woman who later became my wife. So I stand by Gus's forever.
Yeah.
I was in the downtown Gus's.
Yeah.
I feel like this whole story could just be a bunch of lies.
You can make it up. It's fine.
Because I can't remember the exact details. Yeah. I just remember being in Gus's, wherever it was, when Gus was signing the paperwork.
For the franchising?
For the franchising.
Oh, boy. I don't think it's a good thing on game day, though, Gary. I think you should wait, get the grease, you know, that's quite a grease injection on game day.
So my point is, I've been a consumer of Gus's forever in multiple locations, even the brand new one just right down the street here on...
It's been around now 4 years, I think.
Mendenhall.
I apologize.
But I do not eat Gus's when I want to feel better about myself at night.
No.
I eat Gus's when I go, you know what? I don't care anymore about this day.
Yeah.
You know what? I give up on the day.
You're not going to be playing a basketball game.
Now, I'm giving up on this day. I'm going to enjoy Gus's. I don't say I've got to play against the Grizzlies tonight. I'm going to eat Gus's. So hopefully that works against the Blazers. We will see.
Story number two.
Interesting story from Nicole Auerbach at The Athletic earlier today. She reported that there are several power brokers, decision makers in college football who are now open to the idea of expanding the 4-team college football playoff to 8 teams, among them Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, who said, quote, it's an appropriate thing to begin thinking about. She's got great quotes from all sorts of people on the Power 5 side of things, which is important. I'll explain why momentarily. One of whom is Barry Alvarez. He's the Wisconsin athletic director. He said, everyone has the same feeling. Expansion is inevitable. When you can do it, and I think we need to serve more people. I think 4 was the right way to get started, but in my opinion, we need to take a look at adding more teams into the playoff, giving more opportunities. And it could, according to Nicole's reporting, come as soon as 2020. So the common thought, at least the public word, has always been, we signed a 12-year agreement to do a 4-team playoff, and after those 12 years are over, then we will
re-examine it later, that much later.
What Nicole's reporting strongly suggests, and it's not just her all off the top of her head, it's coming from Power 5 decision makers. What Nicole's reporting strongly suggests is that we will have an 18 playoff well before that 12-year contract expires. And the reason it's more true today than ever, I think, is because I've said this for a long time. Central Florida can scream all it wants. Mike Oresko, the American Athletic Conference commissioner, can yell all he wants.
Mm-hmm.
It does not matter because they don't have the power.
No.
Central Florida getting left out of the college football playoff will never be a reason that the people who run the college football playoff think they need to expand. It'll be a reason I think they need to expand.
Right.
Because it's illogical to have a sport of this magnitude where there's not a clear path to a championship for everybody that plays in the same division.
Mm-hmm.
UCF plays Division I football, same as Alabama. But UCF has no path to a national championship because it operates outside of the Power 5 structure. If you didn't learn it last year, you learned it this year. And it doesn't matter what UCF did with its non-league schedule. That's the other, the new argument you hear. Mm. Well, go out and schedule somebody, two somebodies, three somebodies. And then maybe you'll prove you are one of the best four teams in the country. First off, people won't play them.
No.
Okay, like people won't play them unless it's slanted in an incredible way.
Right.
For instance, Florida has said we would play Central Florida 2-for-1, which means that they come to Gainesville.
Right.
Then we'll go to Orlando, but then they come back to Gainesville.
Yeah.
And UCF is saying, we are a top 10 program. We've gone undefeated two straight years.
Yeah, they ain't doing it.
We're not going to sign a lopsided deal. Now, I would actually argue if I were advising Central Florida, because this is the same thing I've told college basketball coaches about scheduling. College basketball coaches always say things like, like Porter Moser at Loyola Chicago. Yeah. They're coming off a Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get anybody to play. And he says, we're a Final Four team. We're not going to be a bye game for somebody. That's not the way our program is going to conduct itself. We're better than that.
Right.
And my thing to Porter has always been, okay, but then you don't get any games. Like, that's fine, but you'll be on Selection Sunday with no at-large resume.
Yeah.
So you...
Nobody's going
to
schedule that.
So, like, when you refuse to be somebody's bye game, and what that means is you take a check from Memphis for $85,000, you go to FedEx Forum, you play Memphis, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't never coming to your place. Porter says, like, if we're going to go to Memphis, then Memphis got to come to us. Mm-hmm. If we're going to go to Maryland, then Maryland's got to come to us. If we're going to go to Illinois, then Illinois's got to come to us. And I say, that's fine, but they're not going to do it.
Ain't doing it.
And so, ultimately, you're not hurting Illinois by not playing that game.
Right.
Or Memphis by not playing that game. You're just hurting your own program.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the goal has got to be to get the games however you can get the games. And if you've got to sign 2-for-1s, if you've got to go be somebody's bye game, and that's the only way to get the game, then you got to go get the game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's fair. That is your reality. And so that would actually be my advice to Central Florida as well. We don't have to go play 2-for-1s with Florida. Fine, then you don't get to play Florida. So guess what happens? You win all your games again, and people say you don't belong in. But even if they did do that, here's my point.
Yes.
One way or the other, the committee would leave them out.
Sure.
Because
you're not in the Power Five.
Right now, the explanation is they haven't beaten enough. They haven't beaten a quality opponent. If they did go beat Florida, then it would just be they haven't beaten enough quality opponents. It'd always be something. And it's ridiculous to have a sport where teams can go undefeated and not play for a national championship. It's not true in any other sport, mainstream sport in this country. I don't care how bad your baseball team looks on paper. If it wins all of its games, they will win the World Series. I don't care how bad your basketball team at the NBA level or college level looks on paper. Don't matter what league you play in or at the NBA level, what conference you play in. If you win all your games, you'll be world champions. In college football, you can win all your games and not even get a chance to play for a national championship. That's wrong. And when the people on the Power Five side of things start to acknowledge that, plus, and this is really the thing that's pushed them to this point,
yep,
that the Big Ten champion can't get in, that the Pac-12 champion can't get in. The Big Ten champion's been left out of the playoff three straight years.
Yep.
You want to know what makes these men in the Power Five level move towards expanding to eight? It ain't UCF getting left out undefeated. It's the Big Ten champion getting left out 3 years in a row. And so now they're saying, hey, listen, what's the harm in expanding this? There really isn't any harm. And the great thing is then we'll be assured as a Pac-12 of having our champion in that playoff each year. Same thing for the Big Ten. And the other thing that's motivated them, again, according to Nicole's reporting, is that look at the national championship game. Southeastern team. You want to have national appeal, but your playoff is not...
It's not a United States-wide thing. It's based here.
It's southern. It's been mostly southern teams.
Yeah.
So you expand it.
Yep.
Perhaps we'd still get to the same championship game, but at least you'd have the map represented a little bit better than the 4-team playoff has had the map represented. So you throw all these things into a bowl, mix it up, and again, go read the story at The Athletic, but it looks like, and this is great news, that we could have an 8-team playoff way sooner than most people have thought before today.
Story number 3.
We've talked yesterday about possible Big 12 expansion based on a Stuart Mandel column that said before the American Athletic Conference tries to convince its members to sign grant of rights agreements, the Big 12 should go out and get UCF right now and maybe three other American Athletic Conference schools. The report said UCF, USF, Houston, Cincinnati. But if you're a Memphis fan, you'd hope that one way or another Memphis, if this ever happened, could get into that conversation. Either way, the Big 12 hasn't said they're looking into that. It's just something that Stuart Mandel had suggested. But the Big East commissioner, Val Ackerman, did say this week to my colleague Matt Norlander in a column that was published today that they are looking.